But now, I went along to the Whipple Museum of the History of Science on Free School Lane in Cambridge and met Josh Knoll to find out how globes can tell a story about our understanding of the solar system.
We're in the upper gallery of the Whipple Museum. This has traditionally been a space that the museum has used for special exhibitions and temporary exhibitions, the most recent one of which we put in here was an exhibition of the museum's very extensive and impressive collection of globes.
What is it that we can learn from looking at globes?
There are a number of ways that I could answer that. I mean, they represent a side of astronomy that we perhaps often might not think about, which is the popular and public side of astronomy. They're not your typical big telescope. They represent the material culture of the consumption of astronomy. So I think they're interesting in that sense. The other reason that they're particularly interesting is that, especially in the case of these globes, what they do is that they can serve as a kind of challenge to the conventional story that we have. So if you take the case of Mars, there are lots of well-known stories about Mars, particularly about what I'm interested in, which is this controversy over whether or not there were canals on Mars. And the globes were an interesting way to look at that story and see if you could fit the globes within that story. And I found, in a sense, that you couldn't, that somehow, therefore, the globes were a nice kind of challenge to the conventional story about Mars.
So moving over to your display of Mars globes, there are five different globes in here, and if it wasn't for the label, I would not know that these were supposed to be showing me the same planet.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the most remarkable things about them that immediately strikes you, and why I think that's such a wonderful collection to have in one case. You're completely right. They look, all five of them, look really very different. Probably the only possible similarity between all of them that you can see is this tendency towards a kind of orangey-brown hue. Other than that, the features that they mark on them all look very, very different. And this is over a very short time span as well, if we look at these globes. If we look at the three globes that predate the space age that we have here, the first one's from 1873, the next one 1898, and the next 1913. So you're looking at a span of 40 years, and really, they're completely different, each globe. And that, to me, is absolutely fascinating, and one of the things that drew me to these and made me want to discover, well, what are these globes, why were they made, and what are they depicting, and who was making them, and of course who was consuming them, who was looking at them.
Who were these aimed at? Were these for scientists to mark out what they've seen and then check it later? Were they for the public to consume, or were they for a rather more discerning, perhaps wealthy clientele, just as an object of art?
Well, I think each globe has a slightly different intended audience. If you look at our first one from 1873, now this predates the idea of canals. The canals were first mentioned by an Italian astronomer in 1877. So this globe that predates them is a very interesting artifact of the period just before this, when for the first time Mars was beginning to be coherently mapped. So what we need to understand about Mars is that it was at the very limit of the resolving power of Victorian telescopes. It was an extremely difficult object to observe, even under the best conditions. So what had happened in the 19th century up to that point is that there was no coherent map of Mars. There were a lot of different astronomers passing pictures back and forth, discussing things. And now this globe is one of the first to set down and embody a coherent map of Mars. And I think in a way that's why this globe was made. We don't know a great deal about it. We know that it was commissioned by an aristocrat, Captain Hans Busk. They were made by the London globe maker Malby. The map itself is by a very famous Victorian, what you might want to call a popularizer of astronomy, a gentleman called Richard Proctor. He had taken the numerous drawings of the Reverend William Rutter Dawes, who was known amongst the Mars observing community to be a particularly good observer and draftsman. And he had collated all these drawings and produced a coherent map. And Proctor himself said that the beauty of a globe is that it's an actual embodiment of the planet. So it's a rhetorical tool that I think is more powerful than a map.
So working on that basis, we can look through the rest and see how the details, the names, the structures, the contrast has actually changed. And oddly, it seems to change quite dramatically. In fact, the most recent globe you have, which is just from 1978, seems to have lost a lot of the detail.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what happens is that after 1877, Schiaparelli talks about these canali. There are certain people within the astronomical community who jump upon this idea of possible canals as potentially evidence for extraterrestrial life on Mars. Now, this may sound wacky to us, but it absolutely was not at the time. It was a widely discussed and important topic. Was there life in the solar system? Camille Flammarion, who is the man who commissioned and produced the map for our second globe from 1898, he jumped upon the canals as suggested by Schiaparelli and suggested that this was an interesting idea. And he set up his own observatory on the outskirts of Paris, especially for observing Mars. And he produced these maps and he produced this globe. And we can see that there's a great deal more detail on this globe than the earlier. And that detail is particularly lots of straight, dark lines. And those were the canals. And those, Flammarion suggested, may be evidence that there's intelligent life on Mars constructing waterways for moving water. It's a slightly organically shaped surface. Flammarion slightly hedges his bets a little with his structure. And that is distinct from our next globe, which very much takes this Flammarion model of having these straight lines and turns it into an absolutely and completely linear construction. It's made by a Danish artist who we know very little about, a bedridden Danish artist who hand-painted them. And she's based it on the maps of the very famous American Percival Lowell. He was an extremely wealthy businessman and interested amateur scientist. And so he built his own observatory in Flagstaff, Arizona, and the observatory is still there, again, dedicated to looking at Mars. And now he absolutely believed that the canals were definite evidence. And so they are ruler straight on his maps, and they're connected by nodes, and the nodes, he said, were the main habitations for the Martians. And so this globe was made by this artist, Ingeborg Brunn. She was fascinated by Lowell's ideas and by his maps. And so it was her way of kind of distributing what she thought was a true representation of Mars.
Moving forward around 60 years, we have a globe from 1970. Now, by this point, of course, we have much better telescopes. We have been out into our solar system. What does this globe tell us?
Well, this globe is actually, it probably just postdates the first NASA missions to Mars. Obviously, interest in Mars continues. Even the idea of the canals doesn't go away. History of astronomy sometimes is written as if it disappears. Public interest in Mars is still very strong. NASA is very keen to send probes to Mars itself to be able to take images close up. In the mid-60s, Mariners 3 and 4 are sent to do just this, and Mariner 4 is able to fly past Mars and send back close-up images of the Martian surface. Now, these images are quite limited, but what they do show is that there's no sign of Martians, no cities, no canals, and it appears to be quite arid, pockmarked surface with lots of craters in. And so this globe, which is produced just after it, is intended to show this feature. And so what's interesting, I think, is that they've retained very much this idea of Mars having lots of interesting and novel surface features. There's a lot of contrast in this globe, and there's an awful lot of craters and features and big mountains and volcanoes. And I think it's kind of hanging on to this idea of Mars having all of these interesting and novel features on its surface. That idea doesn't last that long. If we then look at the next globe, which is made in 1978, so probably about 10 years after this globe, this is made after Mariner 9, which is the first space probe that is actually able to orbit Mars, and that sends back images of 100% of the surface. And it's only then when it really hits home that Mars is quite different from a lot of these previous ideas, that in fact it's actually quite a featureless, in many ways, planet. It seems to be very flat, very arid, very rocky, but it does have a small number of really rather spectacular and huge features. Giant craters, the remnants of what appear to be riverbeds, there are volcanoes. And so this globe is a topographical globe that actually shows the three-dimensional features of the Martian surface. So it's really got to the point now where the most interesting thing about Mars is these large three-dimensional features like craters.
That was Josh Knoll explaining how globes can help to fill in our understanding of the history of astronomy. It really is a wonderful collection as well.
Yeah, it's frightening to think that although we think we're doing very objective science all the time, the prevailing ideas of the day, like whether Mars has been terraformed or not, reveal themselves through the way that people present their data.
And as Josh was saying, actually, it's also very interesting that what gets written down and passed on is actually, it's written from the perspective of the people who turned out to be right. And so these sorts of things that appear to be crackpot ideas were actually pretty well regarded at the time. And it's only now that we look back and think, well, that's obviously crazy.
Yeah, and I think there's a clear historical lesson that we ought to pay attention to.